Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Love Strategies. I'm Nina Atwood, and my goal is to take you on an inspiring journey of self-discovery and relationship recovery. I'm the host of the show, but this is really all about you, and it's for you, the single woman who wants to date smart and find the love of her life. On this show, casual sex is dumb, being choosy is smart, and the prize is a healthy, loving relationship that lasts. So call in, share your dating and relationship stories, ask the questions that keep you awake at night, and get coaching. The number to call in is 347-308-8511. That's 347-308-8511. Now, stay tuned for Love Strategies.
Good morning. This is Love Strategies. I'm Nina Atwood, your host. Well, if this is your first time to listen, welcome to the show. And if you've been here before, I'm really glad to have you back. I've got a lot of things to share with you on today's show, but I'm also taking calls. So if anybody is there, you have a question about your life, about your relationships, do call in to that number, 347-308-8511, and I'll do my best to help you. So on this show, what I'm going to be talking about with you today is how materialism kills marriage. And I'm going to explain to you what that means and what it means for you as a single person, if you are a single person listening to this show today, or if you're in a relationship and you haven't yet made that marriage commitment. You really need to hear this information before you do make that kind of a commitment to somebody. And if you are married and you're wondering why your marriage is not working and you're deeply in debt, this might give you some clues about that as well. Also on the show, we're going to talk about the real reasons for most divorces, the real reasons for most, not all, but most divorces, and why almost all of them are preventable. And this is an amazing body of research and information that's come out recently that's really telling us that the reasons we think that marriages end are not the reasons they actually do for the most part, and that there are things that we could do to prevent those divorces from transpiring. Now, let's get back to the story on materialism. So this is from a new body of research, a new study that was done by Brigham Young University and William Patterson University. If you care about where it came from, you want to look it up yourself. But this study of married couples was one in which the researchers wanted to find out whether or not these couples or which couples had a high priority on getting and spending money. That was basically the core of the research. Who is it that places a high priority on getting and spending money? And they found a certain percentage of couples that were that way. And so they dug deeper into those marriages to try to understand what that meant for their marriage. And so here's what they found. The couples who were really making that a high priority, getting a lot of money, spending a lot of money, here's what they found about their marriages, what they found about them as individuals, and what they found about their marriages. They found that overall they had less emotional maturity than most couples. They also found that their communication was poor, that they had a lot of negative conflict, and of course, you know, what would all that lead to? Well, it means that you have less relationship satisfaction overall. And so what that, of course, leads to is the next step, which is less marriage stability, meaning that these couples, with all of the conflict and not being as happy, they're less likely to stay married. And so then, of course, many of them do later go on to get divorced. But what they were trying to do was to find out what does this mean for marriage when people are heavily into getting and spending money. And so they found that these couples liked these kinds of thoughts. They express things like, well, I really like to own things to impress people. Or they had a belief that money can buy happiness. And then they were surveyed about their marriages after that. And so they admitted they had a strong love of money. And that seemed to lead to a whole host of other problems which then made their marriages less stable. So what is this study telling us? Well, I think it's telling us a number of things about relationships and marriage. And one of the things that we can take away from this kind of a study is the important thing is not so much on the fact that the overall quality of the marriage was low, because that's kind of a given. That's pretty obvious. But what it really tells us is that the problem was in the people in the marriage. It was not the marriage itself. It was the people in the marriage, and that there were certain personality traits that seemed to go with this kind of approach to money and possessions. High desire for a lot of money and a lot of possessions. There were personality traits that go along with that. And those personality traits don't usually lead to a happy marriage. And I hate to put the big ugly stamp on people for having certain personality traits and kind of deem them unworthy of marriage. And I don't like to think anybody's completely unworthy of marriage, but the truth is that marriage isn't for everyone. Some people are simply not emotionally mature enough to really conduct themselves in a way that leads to long-term marriage. That's just the truth of it. So here's what we can conclude about the personality traits that go along with this materialism, this desire for money and things. All right, one of those traits is you usually see that person having a shallow emotional world. So what that means is that person really doesn't feel very good in general, doesn't bond very well with other people, doesn't have much inner reflection, usually doesn't have a great deal of self-awareness or insight about themselves. When trying to deal with other people in the world, this is someone who just doesn't connect very well. They don't feel very much for other people. All their feelings are about themselves, if that makes sense. So, but what they do have is an emotional high when they get new stuff. So that's where they're able to feel something, not in the relationship world or the inner world, but in the exterior world. So that's one of the personality traits we see with folks like this. And here's the other thing, is that this person is usually going to be a narcissistic kind of person, meaning that it is all about them. It's all about their gratification. And so when you're making decisions as a couple, then you're going to see this kind of a person is always going to be wanting to make those decisions that lead to them getting more stuff. All right, and so very narcissistic. And the other thing, and I think this is an important one to really watch out for, especially if you are single and you're dating people and you're wanting to make sure you don't end up married to someone like this, is that this is usually a person who is trying to fill an inner void, an emotional void. This is someone who had a miserable childhood, was abused or neglected in some kind of way, and they haven't dealt with it. They haven't come to terms with that. They haven't done the therapy they needed or the personal growth work they needed so that they could shift out of that miserable deficit orientation so that they could learn how to fill the void with things, not with things, but with the stuff of life that really matters. Because when you have an inner deficit, an inner void because of a bad childhood, it is vital that you do the work that you need to do on yourself so that you learn how to create a life of meaning, and not meaning around stuff, meaning around how you're going to make a contribution, how you're going to have a purpose, a sense of purpose in your life, how you're going to use the gifts and talents that you've been endowed with by your creator, and how you're going to use those to actually make a positive difference in the world. Those kinds of things fill that void. Relationships that matter with other people, people that you cherish and that you give to, those things fill the void. Stuff never fills it. No amount of money or material possessions can ever fill the void that is left behind from a bad childhood. But this person who has a materialistic orientation typically is someone who hasn't understood that. And so that person is trying to fill the void by having more money and more stuff. So what is all of this telling you if you are a single person and you're out there and you're dating and you are not a materialistic person? You are a person who wants to love and be loved. You want a soulmate. You want someone to share your life with, someone who's a companion, someone who you can trust, someone who will be your partner in life. So how do you tell? How can you spot this materialistic person so that you don't get your life, really and truly, you can have your life ruined by being with someone like this? Absolutely ruined. So here are some little signposts that you can look out for. If you're a guy, let's say, I'm going to take it from the guy's perspective first, and then I'll talk about from the women's. So if you're a guy, you're a successful guy, and you have money, or maybe you don't, maybe you don't have a lot of it, but here's what you should watch out for, is that she seems to have a high level of entitlement. So she gets upset when you don't take her to the most expensive restaurant. She gets upset when you don't spend the most amount of money to get the, get, you know, if you go off on a trip, she wants to be in the five-star resort, regardless of whether you have a five-star pocketbook. So she has champagne taste on a beer budget. She lives above her means. She's in debt. She's not conscious or aware of saving or building toward a future or anything like that. It's all about today. It's all about what can I buy today. She's going shopping when she doesn't have money to go shopping. But that sense of entitlement is something to really watch out for. That's true for both. That works the other way as well. Here's an example. One of the very successful CEOs that I coached met a woman and really began to fall in love with her, but he completely lost his infatuation with her when she began asking him for money because she found out that he was really wealthy. And she wasn't asking for money because she couldn't pay the rent. I mean, she was a single mom, and he definitely felt a lot of compassion for where she was in life, and she was not working at a really high-level job because she wanted to be with her child. But and it was would have been one thing if it had been for something to, you know, help her through trying to be a good mom to her child and that sort of thing. He would have gladly done that. But she wanted money to go out and buy couture clothing. And there was no way that she could remotely afford that herself. She wanted him to fund that higher lifestyle that she really couldn't afford. Well, that pretty much killed his infatuation for her because he began to realize that he was just a dollar sign in her eyes. So if you're dating someone that, if you are the person who has wealth and you are dating someone who does not, then you have to have a certain amount of skepticism. You have to be able to find out if that person really loves you or if they are really with you because they see you as a big dollar sign. And the way to do that is just don't put materialism out front. If you're a guy, drive a beater car for the first few weeks until you feel a real bond with her. If you're a woman and you live in a beautiful home, don't invite him to your posh pad until you've spent a lot of time getting to know him over coffee, lunch, and dinner. Go out and meet him in public places and spend a lot of time getting to know him. Don't be afraid to do background research on somebody. Try to find out what their credit score is, things like that. I know that sounds really kind of cold and not terribly warm and fuzzy, but you have to have some reality in dating. If you are a wealthy person and you want to make sure that you don't get taken advantage of by someone who doesn't really care for you, just cares for your pocketbook. So those are some of the signs. Now let's flip it the other way. Let's say that you're the person who maybe let's say that you have a normal average income, but you begin dating someone who really has a big lifestyle, who has an expensive lifestyle, that what you want to watch out for is this person living large because they can really afford it, or are they living large and going into debt in order to do it? So what you want to do is ask questions to try to uncover how much of that person's lifestyle is funded by debt. How much of it is that they're driving the fancy car and living in the great house, but they're highly leveraged, neglecting their 401k, not saving money, spending every dime that they make. Look out for that, because that does not bode well for the future. That means that you will always be, if you marry this person, you might live in a nice big house, but you will always have the stress of being just one paycheck or one windfall, lack thereof, away from having to suddenly sell your big house and suddenly get rid of the fancy cars. What you want to look for is someone who's balanced. If they're living in a nice home, it's because they can really afford it. And maybe they have a mortgage, but not for the majority of the house. They buy their cars with cash. They're just not focused on that. They're focused on other things. They're out there contributing in the community. They have good friendships. They have involvement in things that matter in life. It's not the material focus. That's what you want to look out for, someone who has a really good balance in life. So, and now I want to jump ahead a little bit, and just, there may be somebody listening to this and you are planning your wedding to this person, or maybe you will be soon. You might want to rethink that marriage if the person you are marrying, and I'm going to pick on women again, and I'm going to say if she wants you to borrow tens of thousands of dollars in order to deliver up the fairy tale experience for her, and she's willing to put the two of you into debt right at the beginning of your marriage in order to do that, look out, because that's overspending in an inappropriate way. I know I am stepping on a sacred cow here, but I simply do not believe that weddings are where it is at when people get married. A wedding should always be paid for with cash that is discretionary income you have sitting around in a bank, not your 401k, not your emergency fund, money, overflow money just sitting there that you don't really need. That is what you pay for a wedding with. You do not borrow money to pay for a wedding. You do not take money out of a 401k or neglect funding a 401k or cause your parents to go into debt or neglect their 401k or their future. Weddings should always come from cash, discretionary money that is just sitting there that you don't need for anything else. That's what a wedding should come from. It should not ever cause a financial pain in that person's life in order to pay for a wedding. And I'm not saying that it's, certainly there's nothing wrong with, let's say that you have $20,000 sitting there and probably you should think about, I don't know, getting some new furniture or something, and you decide to put that off for a year. Or it's probably time to do a little remodeling because you've got a really broken down kitchen or bathroom that you need to redo. And if you decide that you'd rather spend that 20 grand this year on your wedding and then save up for the other issues to do that later, there's nothing wrong with that. What I'm talking about is people going into financial pain in order to fund a wedding, not the right focus. We are way too enamored with weddings in our culture. We are not nearly invested enough in marriages. And so when we come back from this short break, want to talk about marriages and how we can invest more in them, because that is really and truly where the fulfillment is in life. Stay tuned. I'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Nina Atwood. Does this sound familiar to you? You start a new relationship full of hope that maybe this time he's the one. But weeks, months, or even years later, you realize that although the name and face have changed, the story is the same. He's all wrong for you, and now you have to continue suffering or start all over. Well, you don't have to keep repeating the same old patterns. If you want to raise your relationship game and put yourself on a whole new course for a happy, healthy, lasting love, get Temptations of the Single Girl, the 10 Dating Traps You Must Avoid. This is a self-help book like no other. It's a parable, an easy, fast story you can read in 2 to 3 hours. The fact that it's a story and not just dry, boring data means you'll retain the lessons learned far longer. And the more you retain, the greater the changes you'll be able to make in your life. That's why I wrote it this way, to make it easy for you to get what you need to permanently alter your love life for the better. You can get the book by clicking on the book cover right from the show page, or you can go to singlescoach.com, find the tab for books and tapes, then click on Singles Coach A Store. Temptations of the Single Girl is available through Amazon.com and as a Kindle book. And now back to more love strategies.
Welcome back. I'm Nina Atwood. This is Love Strategies, and we're talking today about how materialism kills marriages. And I want to talk to you about something else that also kills marriages. So this is coming from an article that was published in the Washington Post on October 20th. It's about the Second Chances Act. But here's what we are looking at. Conventional wisdom holds that about half of all marriages end in divorce. And, of course, most people wish those rates were lower. But most people believe that the reason the divorce rate is so high is because they're happening after a long process of misery and conflict and really dire reasons. And that, of course, you know, once people finally reach the end of that rope, then they file for divorce and it's pretty much all over. But what we're finding out is that that is not absolutely true. What we're finding out is that a lot of people who are getting divorced, in fact, they think it is as high as about 65% of divorcing couples, are really people who are in a neutral place. They had maybe an average level of happiness and not high levels of conflict in the years before their divorce. They didn't have dire situations. Only a minority of divorcing couples, what we're finding out, are the ones who have that high level of conflict, where there's abuse, where there's addictions, where people have drinking or drug or gambling addictions and won't do anything about it. Those kinds of dire situations really only account for a small percent of people who are divorcing. So what the real reason that most people are divorcing is because they drift apart and they handle their everyday disagreements poorly, i.e. they have bad communication, poor communication. So, and the other thing that they have found out is that it is those divorces where people just drift apart or have poor communication, those are the ones that have the greatest potential to harm children. So let's flip that around. Obviously, if there are addictions that are not being treated, the person is unwilling to get help, there's abuse, in those kinds of situations, you know, we all know that nobody should have to live that way. Those people ought to be able to move on. And children generally are better off when couples like that split up, and especially if they can go and live with a stable parent. But the rest of those divorces, the ones where people just drift apart, where they fail to communicate effectively, children do not fare well in those divorces. And the other thing is that a lot of those people are often willing to reconcile or open to reconciliation. They just don't know how the heck to bring it about. So what we're finding out is that there is good reason to slow down the divorce process for those kinds of couples. And so what is being proposed in a lot of state legislatures right now is the Second Chances Act, which is two things. One is giving couples a minimum 1-year waiting period for divorce, along with, the second part is education about the option of reconciliation. So right now there's just so much variability with that waiting period. There are, I think, 46 states have waiting periods for divorce of 6 months or less, and 10 states, there's no waiting period. And we are unusual in that almost all other Western nations have much longer waiting periods for divorce. And in Western Europe, it's not unusual to have a 3-year waiting period. So what the idea is to try to slow things down and then to give people, especially people who are parents of underage children, minor children, the opportunity to take a short pre-filing parenting education course. Okay, so it's focused on parenting, but of course what it's really about is communication. Because if you have children together and you get a divorce, you didn't really get rid of that person. You just have to go into a different stage of your relationship, one in which your ability to communicate is going to be vital to your ability to parent. And so the idea with this is to give these couples this education, and what they're finding is a lot of these parents are saying things like, well, I wish I had known these things, you know, when we first broke up or even before we broke up. So I share that with you because, you know, I get interviewed a lot on television and radio, and I'm often asked to comment on the fact that people, fewer people are marrying, people are waiting until they're older to marry, lots of people are living together and not getting married. And so what does that mean, Nina? Does that mean marriage is going away, or is it just an antiquated institution? And my comment on that is no, I don't believe marriage is going away. I believe people are a bit disillusioned right now because we haven't done everything that we could to educate ourselves about how to have strong and happy marriages. Because, again, we focus far too much on the dating stage, we focus far too much on weddings and romance, and we don't focus enough on the reality that it takes work to be married and to do so happily. So I believe in marriage. I believe that it is the most powerful crucible that you can put yourself in a personal relationship kind of a basis. To be happily married, you must grow up and you must grow personally. And to really parent your children well, you have to do those things. Children fare far better in intact, loving marriages where their two parents are married to one another and they stay married to one another even across good times and bad times. Children do better. There's tons and tons of research behind that, and you're welcome to go look all of it up, but that is the bottom line. If you're going to have children, being in a happy, lasting marriage is the best way to give your children the best opportunity to become who they are meant to be in life. So see, ultimately, all the things I teach single people about how to date effectively are all about getting into happy marriages and ultimately giving future generations of children a better way to grow up. So I'm really all about kids. Didn't know that, did you? All right, well, thank you for listening today. I hope that you will come back for more Love Strategies in the future.
Thank you for joining us at Love Strategies. Be sure and visit the premier website for single men and women who want to date smart, singlescoach.com. Sign up for the newsletter and you'll get notifications for this show as well as other free dating tips. If you want a coach to support you in your growth and recovery, go to Singles Coaching on the website and choose personal coaching. That's it for today, and be sure and tune back in for more love strategies so you can date smart and find the love of your life.